This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but certainly not limited to, the following.
Game one of the World Series is over. A massive storm hits the middle of the country, and a mother kills her baby for interrupting her Farmville game.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News!
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, October 28th, 2010. A Florida mother is charged with shaking her baby to death after he interrupted her Farmville game. She has pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. Alexander V. Tobias, 22, could face life in prison, according to the Florida Times Union, after the January death of her three-month-old son, Dylan Lee Edmondson. Angered that the baby was crying while she played Farmville, a game that uses Facebook as its platform, she allegedly started shaking the baby. Tobias told investigators that she then laid Dylan on the living room couch and smoked a cigarette to compose herself. The family dog apparently knocked the baby off the couch, causing him to cry some more, and Tobias shook Dylan again until he stopped breathing.
This is unlocking the very worst kind of achievement, by the way.
She told investigators the boy's head could have hit the computer while she abused him, according to police reports.
So it's the computer's fault, Dawn. It's not really this poor woman's fault. It is the fault of technology. It's the fault of science.
It's the fault of Facebook, really.
Were it not for the hard-edged computer and the hard-hearted Mark Zuckerberg, that baby would still be alive.
Prosecutor Richard Mantee told the Times Union that Tobias's plea will help the family avoid reliving the tragedy during the jury trial. Florida state guidelines call for 25 to 50 years in prison for a second-degree murder charge, but Tobias could face a life sentence.
So this is, so she already pled? She pled out to it? She pled guilty?
Yeah, she did.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, I like to think that the guilty plea was preceded by some sort of a hosing and then a beating with said hose, like in a squad house basement somewhere.
Well, I just hope she got her crops rotated.
See, here's the thing. I wanted to make a Farmville reference early in the story, but it's like I don't play Farmville. Yeah. Farmville is like Mafia Wars. It's one of those things that I see. You know what Mafia Wars and Farmville are? It's like if you're in like a boat or a raft or something, and you're sort of, you know, you're fishing, you're floating out on a river, as people are sometimes wont to do, and you just see stuff float by you on the surface of the river, and you go, "What's that? I don't know, styrofoam cup or a trout? I don't know, it's gone now." And then you just go back to whatever you were doing. Farmville and Mafia Wars are like that, where I'm on the river that is Facebook, and those things just sort of drift past the transom, and I kind of look over at them, and then they're gone before I can really take in what they are.
Yeah, the great thing Facebook has is this function called hide. So if somebody is playing some game and you keep hearing about it, you can just go hide this. You never have to see anyone play those games ever, ever again. I actually played Farmville for a little while, but I had the same problem with it I have with all like Sims games, in that, as I've told you before, I have a life that needs managing.
You have an actual job.
My idea of fun is not to go into the computer and then have to micromanage my fake life.
Well, it's like those, you know, those guys who just, you know, what are you going to do for fun tonight? I'm going to go harvest gold for 15 hours at World of Warcraft. It's excruciating.
I have to restock my store next door to the Star Wars cantina.
So is Farmville, and by the way, you can tell kind of where our sensibilities lie in the show because we've immediately moved on from the baby being dead,
right. Which is terrible.
Which is terrible, but let's be honest. I mean, what kind of life probably loomed ahead for that child growing up, A, in Florida, B, with that mom?
Yeah.
I mean, really, you don't need a C. I mean, A and B kind of give you the rest. That's enough right there to skip to the end where you have the sum total of that child's presumable life had it lived. What was I just saying? Farmville. So is it like a role-playing game or like is it more like a Sims style game?
It's a Sim style game. It's more like something like Sim City than it is like
the Sims.
Yeah, you get a little plot of land and you plant something and then you have to come back the next day and harvest it and sell it and then you get some more money and so you can plant some more crops and sell those, and then you can buy sheep and crap. And then they try to get you to rope other people in because you can be more effective if you have neighbors who are like your Facebook friends
who are,
you know, nearby, and then you go and you help each other out on your farm.
So it's a Sim come Amway kind of setup.
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, okay.
All of those are like that, though, as soon as you sign on to them now. Because the success of Farmville has taught all of these other people that create these games now, that the success in it is in basically setting it up so that for you to be successful in your game, you have to rope your friends into doing it with you.
All right.
And so it's like, no, I'm not going to inflict this on others, much less. It doesn't take long for me to start being resentful when I start going, oh, crap, it's like 8:30 at night. I have to go on Farmville and harvest my tomatoes or they're all going to die. And then it's like, I'm sorry, this isn't fun anymore. Now it's a job.
So the child was interrupting her game. Mama's going to do her threshing is the new Mama's going to watch her stories.
Yes. Man.
By the way, we're not that show, but if we were that show, we would say one Florida home became Harmville last night when...
We don't traffic in that kind of broadcast.
Here, this is Don Taylor I'm not Don Taylor.
You're really not.
I mean, I guess I could be if we're opposite day. Don Taylor at the Legion of News Desk.
Game one of the World Series is history. Sports business analyst Rick Horro says the winning city will really benefit and gives numbers for New York as an example.
Series, which is right.
When you look at New York numbers, up to $100 or $150 million for a 3 or 4 game homestand in a 7-game series. When you look at the month of October and early November, it's $200 or $300 million of impact.
I got a friend of mine who swears up and down, and it's one of those things that I'm not saying it's true. I mean, how would I really know? But on the other hand, it's just like if it came out that it was true, it wouldn't surprise anybody. A friend of mine who is convinced, I mean, to the core of his being, that the NBA Finals are rigged every year, not to determine the winner, but just to make sure that it goes to at least 4 games or, you know, more than 4 games because, yeah, it's the best of 7. So you could win in 4. But it's like that never happens. Even though one team, it's like the opposite, and I can't believe this is the sort of sports knowledge that is in my head somehow, and I don't really know how it got there. It's sort of like somebody came and just jacked a thing into the back of my skull while I was asleep and swapped me with Greg Nibbler. But, whereas like the Super Bowl, it's always two teams that are presumably evenly matched, but it just ends up being a massive lopsided blowout, you know, where one team gets 70 and the other team just sits in their locker room and cries and curses God. With the NBA, though, it's always the opposite, where there's one team that is massively favored, but they can never just get it done in 4 games. It's always like 6. And his whole thing was, if you would just imagine how much money is at stake for every game in terms of ticket sales, in terms of everything they're selling inside the arena, in terms of the benefit to the actual team that is the victor, and in terms of the advertising. Think of how much more money they're making from 6 games as opposed to 4.
And that's all the legitimate money. That's not even counting the amount of money that is flowing through Vegas with people betting on the game.
So it's like I wouldn't. It's not like it's so beyond the realm of possibility that they just artificially extend that.
I remember there was a game with us, a boxing match with Mike Tyson, probably a good 15 years ago. And my ex-husband was a big sports guy. And he was talking about it. And this was like, you know, Mike Tyson was absolutely at the top of his game.
Right.
I can't tell you who he was boxing because I never paid attention and didn't care. But everyone was talking about it was going to be like another big rout for Tyson. And I looked at my then husband and I said, no, he's got to lose this one. And he's like, well, he can't, though. He's brilliant. He's great. I said, no, he's got to lose. Everybody he's fought so far, he's just knocked them out in like 5 seconds. People are going to stop betting. The money's going to stop flowing. He's got to lose. And sure enough, that particular boxing match, he lost. And my then husband looked at me and said, why didn't you say this when we could have still put money on it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the biggest indication that was probably fixed are the syllables King and Don back to back.
This fellow, Horo, the sports business analyst, says an interesting point is that the Rangers and the Giants don't have the biggest payrolls in baseball. Being able to pay top dollar for top talent usually gives a team an advantage.
Money is a great thing, but as the Dodgers and Cubs and Mets and Angels and others would attest, money's great, but it doesn't buy happiness.
It's like the goddamn Cubs. It's like the entire team. Even I know this. The Cubs and the Mets especially. It's like the entire team is just built on some sort of poltergeist-esque Indian burial ground. Because it's like they couldn't. It's like the other teams could just stay home for the entire season. And there would just be no winning to be had. By the way, ditto the Mariners. Which is why it was especially ludicrous when they just built. You know, because they had the Kingdome, which they then split into two new stadiums, I guess. The one is Safeco Field and the other one is the other thing. But it's. There just seems to be no demonstrable point to that. The best analysis of this entire thing, of the money flowing into baseball and how it relates to the actual victories attained by that team, is in the book The Bronx is Burning by Jonathan Mahler, which came out, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago. And I guess I think they made it into a like a mini series on ESPN. I think it was, what's his name, John Turturro played Billy Martin, which I never saw, but I heard good things about that. But if you are interested in A, baseball, B, politics, or C, New York City and its fall and rise in the late 70s, when everybody had just sort of written that place off and just figured that God was going to come and just give it a big hosing into the ocean and we were going to start from scratch. You really got to read The Bronx is Burning, which takes place over the course of 1 year, takes place over the course of 1977, and manages to weave in the gubernatorial or the mayoral race for New York with the Yankees chasing the pennant. And that was also when Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner and Reggie Jackson were all with the Yankees. And with the hottest summer on record and the blackout that happened for 5 days and the Son of Sam. And it all happened in like 1 6-month period. It's just a fascinating book. It's called The Bronx is Burning by Jonathan Mahler. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Did I ever tell you my story about yelling at Reggie Jackson and he glared at me?
I don't know. Maybe.
I was at an Angel game in L.A. and he was in the outfield and we had these great box seats and he had missed a catch or something. I don't remember what it was, but it was like
something that displeased you.
It displeased me, and I figured I would be in the spirit of this whole baseball thing, and I screamed like something like, Reggie Jackson, you suck, at the top of my lungs or something. Not really thinking about the fact that we're outside, and he's really...
Sound carries.
He's really only about 20 yards away, and he turned, and he looked right at me, and I swear, it was this look like if he could have, he would have just walked over and punched me in the head.
Well, see, you got to be careful with that. I mean, it's taunting athletes is like taunting musicians, because, you know, every now and again, you get a Mike Ness who just decides he's not going to take any of your guff, and he comes down and just beats you until your teeth fall out. Yeah, you don't want to do that. Well, that's like the only time I've ever, I think in my life, the only time that I've ever gone, hey, professional athlete, it was Pete Rose. I think we talked to Greg and Sarah about this when we were on Fun Employment. It was Pete Rose, and of course he was in Vegas, which is what makes it fantastic. This is a guy who's just been horked out of his entire legacy by gaming, allegedly on his own team. And it's like I just saw him at the Mirage or whatever, just sitting there and he's half in the bag, just sort of slumped against the slot machine or something. It's one of those things that I said Pete Rose, and it's like we waved and he kind of waved back in a sort of broken, dispirited way. And I just immediately wished I could have taken the whole thing back. I wish I could have just, you know, gone on my way and never acknowledged him. I think we all would have been happier. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. You can also get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download at Cascadia.fm or at Legion of News. .com and also on your mobile device, that is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Police located the headstone that was stolen from a Sandy cemetery. I think we've had a miracle, said family member Ruth Young, 81. It's like a needle in a haystack. You don't just find it. That's nothing like a needle in a haystack. It's a headstone.
Where was it found?
Well, it was found abandoned near the intersection of Kane and Division.
That's not really a needle in a haystack.
No. This was the headstone, as you'll recall, of Young's late aunt, Ingeborg Thurfgel, which was stolen from the Cliffside Cemetery in Sandy. Detectives searched all the Gresham cemeteries for a vandalized gravesite, but they couldn't find any. The headstone was then placed in the police department's property room, But they couldn't. And then on Tuesday night, a property officer saw news reports about the missing headstone.
Hey, you looking for a Hergen Flergen Fliegen Floggen or something? I think we got that over here.
We're just delighted, said Ingeborg Thurfjell's...
Horgen, Blorgen, Hagen, Nagen.
Aunt, or whatever, niece. Uh-huh. Young says she doesn't care who stole the headstone, or why, for that matter. She's just glad she has it back and that her aunt can rest peacefully.
You know, if this were a less respectful program, if this was a program that trafficked in a not altogether serious version of the news, we would have just had a report from Miss Hergenbloggen, and then I would have just gone to the Swedish chef, just kind of doing
That would be wrong.
No. And also, I mean, and it's just funnier in my imagining, actually, because I'm just picturing the guy saying, and now a word from that family member. And then it just cuts to her, like, throwing chickens and then things exploding. Hey, do you ever notice the Swedish chef has human hands?
Yes, because otherwise he wouldn't be able to handle, like, the pots and the pans and the... And
I didn't realize that until I was watching season 3 on DVD at my home, and it just leapt off the screen as a thing that I had never noticed when I was a kid. And I got past it, but for about an hour it kind of weirded me out.
Well, that is the weird thing about the Muppets when you see the guys actually operating them is because most of the Muppets will handle props and do things. So they have, like, one hand operating the sticks to make the mouth of the stuff move, and then they have one hand doing a hand. And if the puppet has to have two hands, there will be a second guy doing, like, the other hand or something like that. So I'm not sure how they do the Swedish chef, because I know in some of these cases, like with Cookie Monster and which a bunch of these, there's one hand and then one fake hand.
Well, there must
You'll
be...
You usually see him using one arm but not using the other arm.
I'm imagining, now I don't know this to be sure. I don't know this with any sort of certainty, but I think that was Jim Henson who did, because the voice sounds much more like Jim Henson than Frank Oz or somebody. But my guess is that it was a two-personed, two-handed puppet. In other words, that Jim Henson's there and it's both of his hands and the Swedish chef, because he has two human hands, I think.
Yeah.
And then there is a separate person who just operates the body and the mouth.
Probably.
Because here's the thing about the Swedish chef is his eyes are always closed. Because he's Swedish. And
not to be trusted?
Yeah. And so all he really has to do, and he doesn't have much articulation in terms of the face, so all they really have to operate is just moving his torso around and the mouth. Most of the articulation is in the hands, which are those of Jim Henson. So I think that's the deal. Now, if you look at the Swedish chef, you never see his eyes. They're always squinted and filled with evil. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by such fine folks as CJ's High Climbing Services. You can find out more about them at CJ's, that is CJS, CJ's High Climbing.com. And somebody, it's never too early to be in the holiday spirit, apparently. Somebody emailed me yesterday and said, asked if there really was a CJ. No, Virginia, there is not. Well, there was, but there isn't now. It's a whole, I swear to God, Gary, the man behind CJ's High Climbing, sent me like a page and a half in 11-point type about the history of the name and why it's called CJ's when nobody named CJ actually works there now.
Hmm.
And it's fascinating. I'm sure to somebody. We'll make that an outtake one of these days. I'll skip to the end of the page and just say no, there is no CJ there now. There's a whole crew there: Sean, Bo, Lauren, and Gary himself, the crew from CJ's. And the thing about CJ's High Climbing is it is not just. You know, it's not like him and his brother-in-law and some guy that owes his brother-in-law money but can't quite come up with the vig, and so instead he's going to work it off by coming to your house and hosing daffodils out of your gutters or something. I mean, they're all actually employees of the business, which means, here's why you care about that, by the way.
How would you get daffodils in your rain gutters?
Oh, like you don't know. Don't be coy with me, sissy. I'll come over there and I'll cuff you like nobody's business.
I'm just asking.
Lies! Anyway, the reason you care about all of this is because the employees at CJ's High Climbing are actually employees of the company, which means they're covered by workers' comp. The entire company's got liability insurance, and you care about that because, as I think even a cursory glance out your window will tell you, the good weather, such as it was this year, that time has passed. So we're now into a different section of the calendar year, and it's a section which is just filled with just rain and sleet and gloom, and also with things on your roof that will I think contribute to a loss of traction,
like flowers, apparently.
Exactly, like daffodils, cunning, crafty daffodils. So you don't have to worry about some guy going up on your roof and then something goes all wonky or whatever. And you don't have to worry about some guy who decides that the solution is just to scrape everything off your roof and leave it like in a pile on your sidewalk or whatever. So CJ's High Climbing, they come to your place, they come to your house, they come to your business. They're going to clean off your roof, your gutters, your downspout, your drain, your whatever. And if it ends up just being a large pile of stuff elsewhere, they're going to take that with them. They're not going to move the junk from one place to another. 503-228-9278, 503-228-9278, CJ's High Climbing.com. This is Don Taylor.
people from the Dakotas to North Carolina were dealing with the aftermath of a massive storm that roared across the country, unleashing dozens of tornadoes, rain, flooding, and eventually snow to some places, leaving behind plenty of destruction and one death in Michigan. Heavy snow and strong winds battered the Dakotas for the second day Wednesday, with visibility reduced by blowing snow and roadways covered by ice, snow, and slush. Conditions were improving early Thursday, and full light weather was expected to return later this week. In central Michigan, where storms knocked out power to thousands of people, sheriff officials said a contracted utility worker clearing fallen trees was killed Wednesday night in Boyne Township after he touched a live wire.
All right, can we just say, just to go back to the CGS high climbing thing for a second? I'm just telling you.
That's why you hire a guy.
I'm not saying your house is lethal, but if it is, you don't want a piece of that. Let that be someone else's problem.
Eight tornadoes touched down in Indiana, three in Kentucky, and six in Ohio, including one with gusts of at least 111 miles per hour that ripped through a village in the northwest part of the state, destroying several homes.
Is this the whole, is this the story that was leading to you trying to figure out if these states were in the middle of the country?
Yeah, because I, yeah.
This is one of the things.
That's embarrassing.
One of these, you know, one of these days we ought to just, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of having, like, we don't have a webcam or anything in here. Because, you know, like, nobody wants to look at our pasty, pale asses. So we don't, you know, it's not like something where you can go, look at the DJs do their radio program. Which is a thing that, like, radio stations, for example, think is way more fascinating than it really is.
Yeah, it's not.
And they always try to sell that to people. Like, you can be the sponsor of the webcam. And it's just like a static shot of just some fat load scratching his ass, like between Slipknot records.
No, just, nobody wants to see
no.
it.
You know, just some bald guy getting ready to play you more John Mayer. So we don't
if
have
If we
that.
Were exceptionally attractive, we would not be on the radio.
No, I mean, there's a reason. No one really chooses this profession. You just sort of end up here, I think. It's just sort of, it's like a little bit of, not so much a tide pool as it is just a swamp that's cut off from all other areas where you might actually make a decent, reputable living and not shame your family. So for that reason, we don't have a webcam or, you know, the closed circuit feed before the show or anything. If we did, however, and there are days when I'm tempted to do it, just to come in and just rig something up in the dead of night, because it was like 5 minutes before we got on the air this morning, Don, you did this thing where you're like, is Indiana in the middle of the country? And I just said,
and you're, yeah, of course it is.
Sure, why not? And you said, okay, well, what about Ohio? And I said, yeah, fine, yes, sure, it's in the middle of the country. And then you couldn't be sure with any sort of, like, you didn't have time to look at a map, and so there was no way that you could check with any specificity to the location of Ohio. And you decided to skip the phrase, the middle of the country altogether, because your journalistic integrity was on the line and you didn't know where anything
right.
was.
But you assured me that anything between New York and California is the middle.
That's exactly it. It's just a state where nothing happens and no one of any importance lives.
Yeah, so, no, I am one of those people that, smart as I am, and I think I'm reasonably smart, if you, like, did that thing where you gave me a piece of paper and a pen and said, draw where all the states are, it would just be embarrassing.
Oh, no.
I have no idea where anything is.
I am that guy that they always talk about in the CNN story where they say, and only 15% of Americans could find Iraq on a map. I am not. I am one of the 85. I don't know where anything is. I don't. Countries where I am sending trillions of dollars every year to fight wars, couldn't find them. None of you, I mean, no, there's just no way. I mean, an infinite number of monkeys, in a room could not assist me with that. So
here's Don Taylor.
Most of the comedy was out and the campaigning was in during President Barack Obama's visit with host Jon Stewart of The Daily Show Wednesday night.
I'm sorry, I missed it. President who?
Barack Obama.
One more time. It's my trick.
That would be President Barack Obama.
Okay, just checking.
Mr. Obama talked about change, something he said will take time.
During the campaign, change you can believe in.
Right.
It wasn't change you can believe in 18 months. It was change you can believe in, but you know what? We're going to have to work for it.
Somebody's got a speechwriter.
Obama reaffirmed that what he said during his presidential campaign still holds true, especially when it comes to change.
We don't regret, during the campaign, having said that we can change that process. We can make it more transparent. It's not going to be ideal. We can reduce the power of special interests, although special interests are still going to have power in a democracy.
At the end of the show, Mr. Obama made a political pitch, which Jon Stewart said caught him off guard.
Can I just make a plug just to vote? Make sure that folks out there...
I didn't know what you were going for.
When you said, can I just make a plug, I was like, are you dropping an album? What's happening here?
Yes, because if you don't vote, you run the risk of things not actually changing and everything being the same from year to year.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Did you... You know, I have to say that... Much as I hate to be that guy, who everybody works next to. Like, there's always some guy in the cubicle next to you that wants to try to recreate an onion story for you verbally, and it's never funny, and it never really works. It's like, hey, did you see that onion story the other day? I can't really remember exactly how it goes, but it was something like, and then he just completely mangles it in a way that strips out all the humor.
And you're about to be that guy.
I'm about to be that guy. So, I was thinking, by the way, I don't have to talk about this now, but so last night I got to go to a costume party. And
you got to go.
I did. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that.
Did you preview your John Munch costume?
That's a long story. But I realized last night, you know, I should have just gone as that guy. And I'm not quite sure the specifics of it or the details of the costume, but I think there's something to be said. So maybe for next year, I'm going to start working on that, where it's like, who are you? I'm that guy. And then it's like I would just do something that that guy would do.
I like that.
It's conceptual. It's a theory right now. It's like a concept car, but it's a concept costume. Mm. So I'm just saying, I'm calling dibs on that. So I hate to be that guy who's reciting the onion thing, but Barack Obama and the change and the whatever. I have to tell you that in the last, like, I don't know, 10 years or whatever, reading The Onion, there's a handful of headlines that you see every now and again, and they just sear themselves into your memory because they are so perfectly crafted. Where you know that the person who came up with these in The Onion pitch meetings was just, they were touched by God for that moment. And it was right as the election on 8 was nearly upon us. It was like in maybe October's, right before everybody voted for president. It was just a big picture of Barack Obama speaking to a crowd, and it just said, black guy keeps asking America for change. And it was that thing where, like, you laugh, and then you sort of suck the laughter back in because you're not sure if it's appropriate. And then you realize it's too late and you don't care.
There's this commercial for Chase credit cards. And it's this African-American gentleman who is going around town doing different things. And every time he uses his credit card for something, somebody comes up and hands him a dollar. And my husband was the one who noticed that every single person in the commercial who goes up and hands him a dollar is a white person. Mm-hmm. And so my husband decided that this was a commercial all about white guilt, that the Chase is the credit card of white guilt.
So it's sort of like, so instead of getting airfare, you know, or like miles or something, or, you know, getting like cash back at the end of the year,
a white person will just walk up and hand you a dollar.
A white person will prostrate themselves before you and say, oh, please, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Will you take... Yeah.
Sorry for the racism. Sorry for the slavery. Here's a dollar.
I apologize for the whole 400 years behind everybody else thing. Have a buck.
The Chase reparation card.
That's awesome. All right. I'm going to ask for that when I hit the bank later today. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your science on the march for Thursday right here at Legion of News.
Buying your child a pet frog might carry a downside that extends beyond being icky, a new study finds. Pet African dwarf frogs harboring salmonella have sickened at least 113 people.
Why is it got to be an African frog, Don?
Give me a dollar. They're making children sick.
Okay.
According to the Centers for Disease Control. This is the first multi-state outbreak of salmonella associated with frogs, says Shauna Metti, an epidemiologist with the CDC in Atlanta, who presented the findings in Vancouver, Canada. CDC investigators became curious when doctors began reporting a spate of cases of the Typhimurium subspecies of salmonella in 2009. Between April 2009 and March 2010, Metti and her colleagues identified 113 cases of the infection, three-quarters occurring in children under the age of 10. A sampling of 54 of these patients showed that about one-third needed hospitalization. Symptoms ranged from cramping to severe and even bloody diarrhea. Bacteria transmission took many forms. For example, one woman cleaned a frog aquarium in the kitchen sink and subsequently bathed a three-week-old infant in the sink.
By the way, I think if you're ever going to use the phrase bloody diarrhea, it obviates the use of the word. What was it? Extreme? Severe?
Severe.
I think that goes without saying. I think one implies the other.
Well, is it severe and even bloody diarrhea?
Ugh.
The researchers traced the infected frogs to a single breeding facility that houses 800,000 to 1 million African dwarf frogs and sells them. Health authorities are now working with the facility's owner to implement cleanup procedures designed to limit salmonella among the animals. The facility hasn't been shut down or even identified publicly, Matisse says, because, quote, we have no regulatory authority regarding the sale of frogs.
Now, is that here? That's not here. Is that actually in Portland?
Well, it's in Canada.
All right. Well, that explains a lot.
Well, actually, I think it's worldwide.
Godless
it's,
Canadians.
I think it may have happened in the United States as well. The study, she gave her findings at a CDC thing in Canada.
A CDC thing.
Well, it was at a meeting of the Infectious Diseases Society of America.
I wonder if everybody there is just sitting inside their own glass cylinder. You know, if they're just like floating in a sort of embryonic egg filled with saline so that they don't have to contact anybody else or shake anybody's hand.
There's just huge bowls with little individual bottles of Purell on every single table.
And the line into the bathroom is like an hour because there's just a guy and they're going, the dirt won't come off! Just scrubbing 1,000 times. Well, because in Oregon, they got that whole thing with the, whatever, the exotic pets or whatever.
Yeah.
There's all those laws about exotic, because there was that debate a couple years ago about whether you were going to be able to buy hedgehogs here. Because you can't, like in California, you can't have a hedgehog. You know, it's like a Cuban cigar thing. Like if the hedgehog just magically appears, like out of the ether, then you can have it, but like you can't buy one or sell one. Mm. And they were talking about doing that here, and then there was some like coalition of animal freaks that got together and, you know, and so. So
the pro-hedgehog lobby is very strong.
Hedgehog alliance. But, all right. Here's Don Taylor.
A small bag filled with coffee grounds is lending robots a fingerless hand. This new kind of gripper, described online in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, is capable of grasping all sorts of different objects with ease. Mechanical engineer Pico Hosoi of MIT says this could be game-changing technology. The idea is so simple, yet effective and robust. The simple gripper is made of a bag of coffee grounds and a vacuum, though other grains such as couscous and sand also work. To pick something up, the bag of loose grounds first melds around the object. Then, as a vacuum sucks air out of the spaces between grains, the gripper stiffens, packing itself into a hard vise molded to the outline of the object. Reducing the bag's starting volume by just a teeny amount, less than 1% of the total, was enough to make the gripper latch on. The transition from fluid-like behavior, such as dry and flowing out of a bucket, to solid, a hard-packed sandcastle, for example, is a physical process called jamming. Because the gripper's bulb conforms to any shape evenly before the vacuum jams it, it's extremely versatile. The goal was to pick up objects where you didn't know what you were dealing with ahead of time, said the researcher.
Okay. Was this really described as a, quote, robust process?
Yes, it was,
okay.
Indeed.
Just
and checking. A game changer.
All right.
Thank you. Nervous parents would probably die for a device that can track their child's location by GPS, see what the child sees, and even take their pulse. But such a device is only made in Japan, according to New Scientist magazine. The device is currently being worn by just 10 children, aged 2 to 6, inside a sensor-studded nursery that helps track and transmit the surveillance data. Parents can log onto a password-protected website from work and assure themselves of their child's safety against bullies or other dangers.
I hate to be the first person to ask this, but nobody else is raising this question, so it falls to me, Rick Emerson. Have we determined that the Japanese are themselves not, in fact, robots? I mean, doesn't it seem likely that they are some sort of cyborg or android race that has been created by an intelligence far superior to our own?
I would not be surprised.
And this is just—we're basically just living in their lab. I mean, that's kind of what this is. We're just—we're sort of their sandbox.
That old Terminator thing. It's like it doesn't have to start in the United States.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. The robots building other robots.
Yeah.
Sung-hee Lee and colleagues at the University of Tsukuba designed the device to transmit extremely weak signals that barely reach a hundredth of the strength of typical cell phone signals. That represented a nod to the lingering worries about how phone signals could affect the human body. Most experiments are already in the works for older school children, including an upgraded version of the device that can record conversations via microphone.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News. We apologize for all the creepiness here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up here before the end of the hour, we have entertainment news and so forth. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up today at 1 o'clock. Today we have... Is that today or is that yesterday?
That is today.
So lots of corpses in the news lately.
Well, we didn't actually get to this corpse watch yesterday.
Ah, okay. So it's a holdover. So we haven't suddenly... There isn't an uptick in corpsifying.
No. I had two corpse watches yesterday, and I went with the one that involved a bear, because how could I not? And this is the other one that I shed.
Corpse Watch coming up today. Job Watch coming up today. Anna Griffin from The Oregonian will be in the studio with us. We'll talk about the upcoming election. We've also got today's top five. Top five songs about Satan. That's today the top five songs about Satan. They're coming up today later on in the Rick Emerson program. We'll also talk about just this goddamn millstone of a decision that we have to make. I mean, it's a good problem to have, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
But this whole thing at the Geek-O-Lantern contest, by the way, you can see the entries at rickemerson.com/pictures. You go to rickemerson.com/pictures. You look at the Geek-O-Lanterns, and there's like I don't know, there's a couple of them have more than one shot, but I mean, there's more than a fistful. I mean, there's a bucket full of entries there.
And we have a lot of prizes. I mean, we have the $100 ThinkGeek gift certificate, and we got like four other prizes from ThinkGeek, but that's only five prizes really to give away, and we have more entries than that, and they're all good.
And they're
really
all
good.
Fantastic. That's the thing, is they're all good. And every time that, you know, one would come in, I'd be like, well, that's the clear winner. Nothing can surpass. Oh my God, it's the Iron Giant! You know, and something would come in, and I would just giggle myself into a frenzy about it. And then it's like we came in, I guess it was, what was the day that it ended? It ended Monday night. So Tuesday morning we came in, I thought, well, thank God that's over. And it's like, and there was one more, the Star Trek one,
yeah,
which I guess had been sent in at like 11:58 or something, just like right under the wire.
Now, I have to admit, I fail to understand the reference since I don't really know a lot about Star Trek.
Yeah, I see. I thought it was a thing to the implosion of Vulcan in the Abrams Star Trek film, but that's probably not accurate.
No, it looks like it looks like the Enterprise has crashed into a meteor.
Yeah, you know who might know.
But I have no idea because I don't know my Star Trek lore.
Anna Griffin might know. She's a big
nerd.
So we'll ask her when she gets in. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211 is where you can reach Michael Beatty and his fine firm. 971-533-3211. That's 971-533-3211. Or you can find out more about that at rickemerson.com/contacts. That is for the tile, the linoleum, the hardwood, the walkway, the marble, the stone, the granite, the carpet, the anything in your house that gradually gets dirty over the course of the summer or the course of a winter or something. You spill, you get a stain. One of the many small creatures running around your home, human or not, creates some sort of an off-putting patch or area on the floor. You can get that taken care of by Michael Beatty and The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211. Please do tell him you heard it here at Legion of News. This is Don Taylor.
A Douglas County, Oregon sheriff's office says a young woman called for help after accidentally shooting her fiancé in the leg while they were deer hunting. The sheriff's statement says 20-year-old Christina Shockley of Rainier told 911 she shot a deer while hunting Wednesday with 33-year-old Robert Service, also of Rainier. The deer was still alive when they located it. Shockley reported that she loaded her rifle, intending to shoot the deer again. When she closed the bolt, the weapon discharged, hitting Service in the back of the right leg. He was taken by helicopter from Bland Mountain in the Dayes Creek area to a Eugene area hospital. The sheriff's office said the case is being investigated as a non-criminal accidental shooting.
These are exactly the kind of people who need to be given just a limitless supply of guns and ammunition and then sent off to some enclosed area to do all the hunting they like. Because you know what that is right there? That's Darwin doing a swing and a miss. That's like when Darwin is trying to get a home run and he just, you know, he sort of bunts it and just gets like the first base.
A Florida man has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Comcast, claiming his 81-year-old wife bled to death because the Comcast operator botched the emergency telephone calls. According to the lawsuit obtained Wednesday, Seidel Reiner was preparing Thanksgiving dinner for her family last year while her husband was on his way to the airport to pick up their grandchildren. While Reiner was setting the table, a wine glass dropped on her foot, causing it to bleed profusely. Reiner dialed zero on her phone, but the Comcast operator couldn't pinpoint her address to give to 911 dispatchers. Comcast provided her home phone service. The lawsuit alleges that Reiner repeatedly called back for help, but 17 minutes passed before rescuers arrived. When Palm Beach County Fire Rescue got to the home, Seidel Reiner was too incapacitated to answer the door. Rescuers left without looking through the window to see all the blood on the floor, according to attorney Gary Cohen. Directly in front of that window pane is a pool of blood, a broken glass, and Seidel's shoe where the incident occurred, he said. And they would have seen that she was bleeding to death, and they didn't bother to do that. It was determined that Reiner died from a severed artery in her foot.
That's got to be the word where you're just sitting there and you're just, you've mangled yourself, or you've maimed yourself in some way, and you're on the phone, you know, and you're calling them when you're thinking, oh, this day sucks. At least I've got the quick response of the 911 operator to help me out. At least, you know, I'm not going to be put on hold, you know, endlessly. And then you call up and then it's just a lot of, you know. It's just a lot of sitting there and hearing hearing like the Rolling Stones' Ruby Tuesday or something played on the oboe, you know, where you're just sitting there and you're thinking, okay, well, they'll help me any moment now. And you get a lot of that, you know, your call is important to us. And you're sort of wiling away.
Did you just play some odd little sound effect, or am I having some sort of like a stroke?
Well, they're both possible, I suppose.
Okay. Because...
See, now I almost don't want to tell you. Now I just want to let you imagine a walnut-sized tumor growing at the base of your spine. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here is your entertainment news for
Thursday here at LegionOfNews.com.
Miley Cyrus's parents, Billy Ray and Tish Cyrus, have filed for divorce. The couple have been married for over 17 years. Billy Ray and Tish have five children, including Miley and their 21-year-old rocker son, Trace Cyrus. Also, after being together for more than 2 years, Gossip Girl couple Blake Lively and Penn Badgley have called it quits. Sources are claiming their commitment issues are to blame for the breakup. Blake was ready to settle down and get married, but Penn wasn't ready to make the commitment, according to reports. Kyle Gass will be... I can't read this. This is a press release, and it's impossible to read. So I'm putting that one aside, and I'll deal with that later.
The best part is that you'd actually looked at it early and flagged it as being something you wanted to read.
I did, and then I realized that it's actually just a press release from his company. Literally, it's one of those things that starts with, 11th Percentile Entertainment is proud to announce the addition of... And it's like, okay.
Was that a thing where you just looked at the picture?
It
was
I love Kyle Gass.
It was like ordering off a menu in Japan. You just saw a picture of Kyle Gass and went, that one. I'll take that story.
I love Kyle Gass, and he's going to be part of the entertainment portion of something called the Beer Naked Wedding and Rock and Roll Reception, which is a celebration of the union between Buck F. Naked, renowned drunkabilly chanteur, and his lifelong love, beer.
Yeah, no, you were right to skip the story. That was...
Yeah, and I love Kyle Gass. I'm a fan of Tenacious D, so I thought this would be entertaining. And it turns out, no, it's really about some guy who is going to marry beer.
Here's the thing, is that Kyle Gass himself may be entertaining. Press releases are never entertaining, because it's always written by some stooge. You know, it's written by some temp that's got the front desk.
Yeah.
This is Don Taylor.
A Philadelphia writer is suing Oprah Winfrey for reading on her show last year passages of a booklet he wrote, and without his permission. According to a lawsuit filed this week in U.S. District Court, Charles Harris alleges that on her show broadcast February 16, 2009, Winfrey read the selections from a publication he wrote in 2000 titled How America Elects Her Presidents. He said Winfrey's actions were deliberate, willful, malicious, and oppressive, and without regard to his property rights. He stated in a suit that he thought having Oprah back his book would be a good business opportunity, and that he sent her a letter and 10 copies of the booklet in January 2008. After 5 weeks, he received no response, and when he spoke with an employee, he was told the letter and booklets hadn't been received. Harris claims in the suit that he received confirmation of their delivery from the Postal Service. Harris claims Winfrey read several of the exact questions in his booklet, and that the language and structure of the questions were exactly the same to material copyrighted by him. He's seeking $150,000 for each intentional unlawful use and additional damages.
I want to have a bumper sticker that just says, I'm being oppressed by Oprah Winfrey. You know, just as a goof, you know, just to see what people would say.
What would be the purpose of that?
That's what I'm saying. It's one of those things that people look at it and then it's like their brow would furrow. And you could probably hear their brains whirring down into a lower gear as they tried to process it.
Is this like that sound that you wouldn't explain earlier? Are you just trying to like confuse me and make me upset and worried about my sanity?
Did the lights just dim? Tell me you saw the lights dim just now. Oh, come on. I don't even get a grin for the gaslight reference.
Yes.
Fine, whatever.
Okay.
No, don't patronize me, Don Taylor.
Well, not coincidentally, this month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
You better read this story correctly.
Today, Law & Order SVU star Mariska Hargitay was at the White House helping President Barack Obama launch a new initiative aimed at combating the problem. Hargitay says each one of us has the power to play a profound role in someone's healing journey.
Yes, but only one of us has crazy eyes, Mariska.
Sexual and domestic violence are not easy things to talk about. Talk about them anyway. And if you suspect sexual or domestic violence, ask.
Okay, then.
Okay, there you go.
Rumors are circulating that Justin Timberlake cheated on his longtime girlfriend Jessica Biel with Olivia Munn. According to Us Weekly, the Social Network actor and The Daily Show correspondent, I keep forgetting she's now a Daily Show correspondent.
I'm not even sure I know who that is.
She's one of the chicks from G4. And then she's done a lot of acting lately.
I'll have to look her up.
Shown up at a couple of movies and TV shows. She is working her butt off to try and become as famous as possible.
Olivia Munn. All right.
Anyway, and she suddenly ended up like being like some kind of a correspondent on The Daily Show for some reason.
M-U-N-N?
Yes.
Oh, I know who she is.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Us Weekly is saying that they engaged in a steamy 3-day fling this past September.
I hope so.
Timberlake, 29, and Munn, 30, reportedly met at a September 26th MySpace event.
You need at least 3 days, I would imagine. Okay, here's the thing. You men and perhaps some of you women out there, you want to go to, presuming that you're in a place where you can do this, you want to go to Google, and I can't stress this point strongly enough, you want to go to Google and look up Olivia Munn. That is Olivia, normal way, and then M-U-N-N. Go to the images section, because, like, not the first shot, but the second result is just her, horking some other woman. Just doing the full face-to-face kiss. Oh, that's a deep kiss.
See, I didn't get that.
That's a resuscitated. Well, I've got a special Google over here.
You have a special Google filter that just gives you women kissing each other.
All right, and then, okay, this is just fantastic. There ought to be, oh my God, come on, there ought to be, like, a Firefox add-in. Like a Firefox add-on, like a little, you know, the tweak you can do your Firefox that just, like, one that removes, you know, something, or one that adds, you know, like, there's one that replaces auto-playing videos. You know, you go to some websites and, like, the video starts playing without you requesting it. So if it detects an autoplay or an autoplay video or sound, it replaces it with, like, a work of art or Stravinsky or something. There ought to be something that just, whenever possible, if one of the results entails chicks kissing, that it just brings that up. It puts that at the top of the page. So the second result for Olivia Munn is her making out with some blonde chick. And then right below that, I swear to God, is one of her just licking the side of an Apple TV box.
Yeah, she's, yeah.
I'm a big fan.
I have to say that one of those moments when I realized that I was just a huge dork, even though I didn't want to be, is that when Olivia Munn replaced Morgan Webb on Attack of the Show on G4, I actually had a strong opinion about it. I never liked Olivia Munn because she replaced Morgan Webb, and I was a big fan of Morgan Webb. And I realized just having an opinion about that at all, about the show on G4, meant that I had turned into just an enormous
nerd.
Geek. Just a huge nerd.
Did Morgan Webb ever pose in a Wonder Woman costume like my new best friend Olivia Munn has?
Well, if you look up Morgan Webb, though, there are some pictures of her in a bathing suit.
Really? Did she ever pose in a Wonder Woman costume directly next to a picture of her posed as Princess Leia from the Slave Girl era in Return of the Jedi?
Next to
a picture of her kissing another chick and above a picture of her licking an Apple TV.
Well, there's Morgan Webb in a bathing suit with some kind of a gaming system.
Life is hard. There's so many chicks to ogle, and there's just so little time in which to do it. So he allegedly cheated with Olivia Munn on who?
Jessica Biel.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see that.
I've never understood the appeal of Jessica. I don't get the Jessica Biel thing.
I mean, she's attractive, but I don't...
yeah, but she's really, really boring.
But that matters less to guys. The thing about Jessica Biel... See, that was the thing is, I liked her when I first saw her in Dark Angel. That was, and I went, oh, hey, who's this new... And then it's like, but it doesn't look like she started talking. And as soon as she began speaking, it was like listening to a bowl of cream of wheat. It was like if Farina could talk.
She's deeply uninteresting.
Yeah.
And she's also one of those women that she's pretty enough, but there's like nothing in her eyes.
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
No, she's like all she's missing is Lars. She sort of is the real girl. By the way, unless anybody think that I'm being sexist, that's not limited to chicks, because you know what I just saw just recently was Piranha 3D, which is actually freaking fantastic. And Jerry O'Connell, you want to talk about a guy where there's just nothing there.
Oh, he is incredible. I saw him on a talk show, and he is one of the stupidest human beings I have ever seen in my life.
He has got the depth of formica.
Oh, he is dumb as a bag of hammers.
He is mind-bogglingly dumb. But, I mean, good for him. It's a competitive industry and whatever, and he was, Fat Vern, so hey, drink deep of the cup of life, my friend.
The thing is, though, Rebecca Romijn actually has always looked like someone who, despite being a model, always looked like she had, like, some actual brain cells to rub together. But she's married to Jerry O'Connell, so...
So you're saying it's surprising that the intelligent girl goes for the wrong guy? Because that never happens. That's so unlike an intelligent woman, just to pick a guy who's wrong for her. Let me take a moment and write to both Johnson and Masters about that. Hey, you're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, more of these glib witticisms can be yours after 1 o'clock on the Rick Emerson Show. We'll have a Job Watch, Corpse Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will be here, and we'll do the top 5 songs about Satan. Right now, you are listening to Legion of News, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them and the business that they do. They've been here for over a decade. 503-252-1609, fully licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors. 503-252-1609. 1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. As we often say, they have done everything from one single outlet, one socket, all the way up to an entire building. They've done condominiums from scratch. They've done multi-story office buildings. They've done new attachments to and add-ons to existing homes. They've taken homes that were built 100 years ago where the home is beautiful, the home is fantastic, but you don't want to remodel it as such. You just want to take the guts of the wiring, the internal stuff, and bring it into the 21st century without having to, remake the rest of the house. You don't want to lose the charm of the original design. You just want it to work properly. And they can do all that stuff, and they'll give you an estimate right up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. Now, there's no job too small or too large. Find out more about Squires Electric and all they do by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
After years of... Oh, that's all the entertainment
news. Oh, I'm sad. All right, hold on a second.
We could keep playing the music if you want, because I like it.
Yeah, there we go. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
After years of national debate over safe sex versus abstinence-only education, the Obama administration has vowed to base its teen pregnancy reduction programs on science, reports the Washington Post. The administration's $110 million sex ed campaign encompasses programs that teach students about the risks of sexual activity, as well as those that urge students to delay sex until marriage. But the administration's attempts to find an evidence-based middle way are being criticized by those on either side of the issue. They are funding programs that censor information about condoms and birth control and have elements that are clearly ideological and not science-based, says James Wagoner of Advocates for Youth, a Washington group that supports safe sex education. The administration has handed out 12 grants worth a total of $9.3 million to abstinence programs, including one program in Virginia that asks teens to make virginity pledges. Meanwhile, abstinence advocates complained that abstinence programs that were lavishly funded by the Bush administration received very little money this time. "We were very disappointed," said Valerie Huber of National Abstinence Education Association. "A paltry number of abstinence programs were funded, neither giving priority to a risk avoidance message nor giving equality to this message." Abstinence advocates contend that only 5 legitimate abstinence programs have been funded by the Obama administration, down from the 169 supported in the Bush era. A warning system put in place after 2004's devastating tsunami in Indonesia failed to alert residents to an approaching 10-foot wave that destroyed Indonesian villages on Monday, reports Sky News. The Indonesian early warning system, 2 buoys that detect sea level changes, stopped functioning a month ago, according to the head of Indonesia's Meteorology and Geophysics Agency. The system was only completed in 2008, and less than a year later, it was experiencing problems. "We don't have the expertise to monitor the buoys to function as intended," the agency chief said.
What are Indonesian villages made out of? Did they have the first little pig construct their entire place? Because a 10-foot wave is not that high. Is that a whole thing where, like, are they all just living with the howls or something?
Maybe.
All right.
Maybe everything's made out of coconuts and whiskers.
Hey, back on the abstinence thing for a second. You had a pause there, and I didn't know if you were going on to the next paragraph, but you were changing stories, so I just wanted to interject this one thought.
Okay.
This whole country is just, our stupid effing economy is just broken anyway, so it's not like we got, a sound fiscal structure that we have to preserve or something, so I think we can take a few risks, right? Because everything's so unbelievably effed. What do we care if we eff it a little bit more? So we can, this is like when you're down to your last, your last 10 bucks or something in Vegas. You might as well just put it up, bet on black, because... what's the point of being conservative? Here's what you ought to do. Now, this is going to cost a lot of money, but I think it would pay for itself. You just give every kid, even if you just wanted to say just the women or just the men, you just say guys, for example. You take every guy and you say, look, at birth, the government is going to create a $180,000 trust fund for you. You're going to get $180,000 in the bank. Now, if you can make it to the age of 25 and you don't have any kids, you get the money. You get a kid before that, so that's before that moment of rapture arrives, think about whether it's going to be worth $180,000. Because I think if the average guy, he just said, well, I don't know, I don't have any rubbers, but I'm horny and all. If you could freeze time and the great gazoo could appear and just go, hello, do you think this is going to be worth $180,000? You would probably say, oh, okay, what should you do then? And then you proceed accordingly. Because that's if you put it in those terms, it wouldn't solve the problem. You're always going to have a few gum chewers that are just going to decide, I'm going to go for it. But I think the number of people who went for it would be significantly smaller. It would pay for itself, I think.
I think it would. I think that's actually very wise.
That's when Rick Emerson is president.
That would more than pay for itself because, the number of people who end up on, like, government assistance and children who end up in the system and such. I think you've got something there.
That's what I'm saying. Well, that, you know, because my first idea, which is just driving around town with a fistful of scratch-up tickets and, like, a welding gun and sterilizing people, that didn't seem to, that didn't catch fire the way I thought it was going to.
You didn't have a good logo.
No.
That's the problem.
No, I was missing a jingle. We'll seal up your tubes and give you some stuff. Get in the van right now. Shh.
Consumer.
Ding. We're Beatrice. What?
No. Consumer Reports is out with the results of their 2010 annual car reliability survey. Honda and Toyota continue to dominate the top of the list, while Chrysler comes in at the bottom. Senior automotive engineer Jake Fisher says the secret to long-term reliability is simplicity.
Some of the most simple vehicles are the most reliable. In fact, the most reliable vehicle from Toyota this year was the Toyota Yaris. It was a very inexpensive car. In fact, the most inexpensive car that Toyota makes.
You know, that thing, that car, Sarah almost bought one of those, and it's like...
It has three moving parts.
Have you seen the Yaris? It's like basically like you're driving a Yugo. I mean, that's why nobody will buy it. Well, although, did he actually say it was the best-selling car? So maybe I've missed that. Maybe I'm totally wrong about that.
He says the best-selling cars are the most simple.
So the Yaris is the best-selling car? That surprises me. It really does. Well, I guess I stand corrected, because when I saw that, it's like I thought of the Yugo, and then I thought about like the SNL parody of, like, you know, the Honda Adobe, where it's just like a car made of dirt.
Yeah.
I guess it's a good thing that people are buying it. I didn't figure they would, because it looks like a roller skate. I mean, it looks like you're in like a toy car.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn, because on the one hand, I love like the little smart cars, and I think it'd be awesome to have one of those little smart cars for getting around town. And on the other hand, I'm like a big fat spoiled American, and for a year and a half, I drove a Toyota Highlander.
Yeah,
and it was just the best year and a half of my life, because it was just this big-ass SUV with, like, heated leather seats and the best stereo system, like, ever.
About.
And I was going, this is awesome.
That's, you know, here's the solution I found to that is just, like, once a year, if you go on vacation or something, just, like, rent a car. Rent, like, some big fallomobile for, like, 2 days. Just some, you know, some massive penis extension device for just, like, part of your trip. Because then you can get it out of your system, and then you can just go back and drive whatever it is you're driving the rest of the year. So then, you know, you get to wet your beak a little bit, but then you don't have to buy the thing.
Yeah.
Especially in Portland, where that just gets you glared at.
Well, this fellow, Jake Fisher, says European luxury car brands like BMW, Audi, and Mercedes-Benz didn't fare so well on this year's list, and it's likely due to their technological advances.
A lot of these high-end European luxury cars, is a lot of electronics in them. The cars are actually getting
very complicated
to drive or do simple things. I think a lot of these electronics they're adding to these cars, there's really more things to go wrong.
Well, that's the thing, because this list isn't about the best-sellingness. This is about reliability.
Ah.
And so the last things, it's like, for a long time, I really dug in and didn't want to own a car that was built before, you know, after the 80s or something, because I liked doing as much work on my own car as I possibly could.
Now it's all computers done.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, it's like there wasn't any way I was like fixing anything on that Highlander, you know. But
it's funny to picture it, though.
But I've had cars where I've changed my own oil, where I've you know, swapped out my own, you know, gas filter and air filters and
remind me to
like
call
that,
you so. The next time I need my I just got my brakes done. I should have rang you up about it.
I have helped on brake jobs.
But that would not be the first time, by the way, that I just sat there while a woman fixed my car for me. So I missed the opportunity to do the whole, like, you know, blah 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 blah, can you say Adobe joke, so I'll have to do that later on. Castalia Language Center helps to bring you this fine program filled with all manner of amusements and laughter. Castalia Language Center, you can find out more about them at portlandspanish.com, but it's portlandspanish.com. Spanish language classes for adults. So if you are gigante? No, that's giant. That's like if you're
that's
that
big.
Program. That's that program that's on Saturdays. Well, whatever. If you're an adult, not so much a child, but an adult, they've got a Spanish language program that is designed for you and for your adult mind and adult way of learning. And they keep class sizes to a maximum of 8 people, so you and 7 more folks, that's going to be the biggest class size ever gets. It means you can get near individualized attention, and they teach you Spanish conversationally so you can speak it in conversation. Find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. They are a proud sponsor of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Find out more at PortlandSpanish.com, Castalia Language Center. It is time to bring the curtain down on another exciting episode of Legion of News. A Rick Emerson show comes your way next at RickEmerson.com. We'll have a Job Watch, Corpse Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and today's top five songs about Satan. Legion of News is also available via iTunes later on today, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm. We come your way each and every weekday at noon from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Have a satisfying and productive day, won't you?